Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about issues that are very close to the heart of people throughout Indian country, and it's a topic that is not confined to Indian country. As we speak so often, health issues really, regardless of what we look at, it seems that it really cuts across cultural lines, and yet there are unique aspects to dealing with health issues in First Nation peoples. Today we're going to take a very important, needful, and very practical look at some of the challenges facing Alaskan Natives in particular. We're going to be talking to individuals working in Alaska with the People Awakening Project. We have three individuals who've been working in that arena: Jerry Mohat, Jim Allen, and Debbie Alstrom. Glad to have each of you with us on today's show.
Thanks. Nice to be there.
Good to be here.
And it's good to be here.
You know, it's wonderful to have people who are actually not only working in Indian country, but really pulling people together from really a wide range of backgrounds, a wide range of experience. And I think a lot of us, as we listen to this show and other programs throughout Indian country, often it seems like there's a very, very deep history, commitment among First Nation peoples to problem solve, to address difficulties and challenges. But when you bring the research component, the language of the institutional researchers of today, oftentimes there's been challenges intersecting this kind of, however you want to describe it, Western model of research with the traditional wisdom of First Nation peoples. And you folks have been working together for many years, and I think our listeners are just going to be very excited about what you've been learning. Jerry, is it fair to ask you, as the director for the Center for Alaska Native Health Research, just to kind of give us a little feel for the history and the scope of the work that you as a team have been doing?
Yeah, what we did is we started about 15, 16 years ago after a conference in Anchorage that was really focused on alcohol abuse among Alaska Native communities. And the reaction of many of the leaders there was that there was so much of a focus on negativity that it was a depressing, very depressing. There was nothing about the strengths and resilience of Native people. So they approached us and talked with us about initiating a process to study and to do research on those individuals who have either never had a problem with alcohol abuse or who have recovered, be able to define what it is that's protective or what allows people to recover. So that was about 15 years ago.
I mean, it's an exciting concept. Instead of really looking at the problem, you're looking at the success and the strengths within First Nation peoples that can help them really be long-term successful when it comes to the whole range of substance abuse, or is it more confined to alcohol per se?
Well, our focus was primarily on alcohol abuse. Subsequently, we've become quite interested in suicide risk because that's a big, big issue in Native country. And it often occurs simultaneously with suicide and alcohol abuse happen at the same time. So they seem to be really related.
This is Jim Allen.
Go ahead, please, Jim.
Discovered was that the other thing that went together were the things that protected people from alcohol and from suicide were often the same things. And one of the things we learned was this knowledge base that could be used with youth, because the adults we spoke to always pointed back to lessons they had learned as young people that they carried forward through adulthood and were sources of health for them.
I mean, it's tremendous. And you, Jim, you know, bring not just a deep cultural awareness to this. I mean, you have, you're actually a professor of psychology at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, as well as being part of the team there at the Center for Alaska Native Health Research, correct?
Correct.
Now, Deb, I know you're an important part of the team as well. You're a field research coordinator for the project. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with the project.
Let me see. Well, I had previously working in other positions, and I had been living away from my community, and there came a job opening here with the Center for Alaska Native Health Research, and I applied for it and then got hired and have been working with a project ever since.
Wonderful. How long have you been on the team, Deb?
This is my third year.
Tremendous. And so as we're kind of getting a feel as a listening audience to something very exciting that's been happening in Alaska for 15 or 16 years, and really a project that started focused on looking at First Nation peoples and the things that that give them strength and resiliency and fortitude as far as the whole area of alcohol, but you're actually learning things that can be very powerful as far as preventing not only substance abuse but decreasing suicide risk. I know this has people's attention really across the board, and especially in Indian country there's a need for strategies. How can we help our kids? What have you been learning that really can make a difference in this arena?
Well, this is Jerry. I think one of the things that we've learned is that it's a systematic process. We interviewed over 100 individuals with their life histories. From that, we were able to identify those factors that appeared to protect them. We were also able to figure out how we could measure those if we were actually to do a prevention project. But the real uniqueness of the project is that we then went to the community, working with Deb and with members of the community, to figure out how would they build this protection through real deep cultural activities that they would plan. So it became, like you were saying earlier, David, it became a real partnership between us as researchers and the community to figure out strategies for building these strengths.
Tremendous. Jim, from the standpoint of a psychologist, I mean, looking at this this whole project, this whole approach, and translating it back into the community as you're learning things, were there some unique challenges that maybe even with all your training you didn't anticipate going into this?
Oh, of course. I think one of the first things that happened that was very interesting was the community immediately directed us to begin understanding what we wanted to do was not prevent problems, but to instead promote sobriety and reasons for life. And in that way, the community turned on its head many of the standard ways that prevention programs work. The other thing they were really very insistent on was that these programs should be cultural programs, not culture-based prevention, but really deeply grounded in the traditions and the ways these communities have been raising the young people now for thousands of years. And I think those two things really both led to the strength of the project and really made it important that the university types really listen very carefully to the community and do whatever we could to ensure the community directed the approach and the program and what they were doing with their youth.
Now, Deb, as a community member and also a member of the team with the Center for Alaska Native Health Research, you've been in kind of a unique position to look at this project through, you know, from a variety of perspectives, really. As you've seen things play out over the last 3 years since you've been a part of the team, what kind of things have excited you about what's been happening with this partnership?
Well, for one thing, the thing that has been exciting to see is watching the youth form relationships with the elders of the village.
Excellent.
As well as interact with them. And another thing that has been exciting too is that families have learned to be a family together.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things, you know, the youth resulting relationships with the elders as well as the families becoming closer mm-hmm. have been really good to see develop.
Wonderful. I mean, this is tremendous to me because, you know, we're sitting here, we're talking about something, you know, like you mentioned, Dr. Allen, something that, you know, if someone from just kind of a sterile perspective, I mean, with, you know, not being aware of the cultural richness that's there in Alaskan Natives, is just saying, you know, we want to address certain health issues, certain problems, the kind of dialogue we're having right now, they would say, well, this isn't, I mean, you're not talking about the problems that we're looking at, and yet the beauty is you're really addressing the problems, and you're actually at the same time, I hear Deb saying, this is really strengthening the community and really reinforcing the cultural values that were there. I mean, to me, this is, I mean, it's really inspiring to hear this.
One of the people on the tribal council who was really helpful in getting this project started in one of the communities we worked with said, you know, it's almost like the community finally took the elders off the shelf again and began to use them and use their expertise in effective ways, in ways they didn't appreciate before. Number of the activities young people did were things like ice safety and under ice fishing and combined many elements of traditional knowledge. And in that traditional knowledge in these activities, the elders would identify important cultural values that they were raised with and that for them defined being Yupik. And within the values are the protections from suicide, from substance abuse. And when you're working with your community on under ice fishing and bringing back food for the community, it also becomes an experience. So the young people mm-hmm. were living these we sometimes call them protective factors, these things that protect these values, these good experiences. So we learned, one of the things we learned was that it isn't just book learning or ideas, it's actually having the experiences through the youth activities that was helpful.
Yeah, really good example is the one Jim was just beginning to talk about, because the protective factor is contributing to your community. So when you learn that, you bring that, those fish to elders and people in need, and that provides a really deep experience of being part of a community as a healthy person.
No, this is powerful. We've got to talk more about this. You've got some tremendous insights, some tremendous things that we can all learn from. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian Living. More fabulous practical insights are coming up. Don't go away.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, also known as NAHI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHI is available at nahicharity.org. The Lifestyle Center of America is another American Indian Living sponsor. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 1-800-596-5480.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose here. We're speaking with a wonderful panel of folks on today's show on American Indian Living. We're speaking with individuals all who are involved with the Center for Alaska Native Health Research. We're especially looking at issues that can make a difference in Indian country when it comes to maintaining sobriety and valuing life, things that decrease suicide risk. And the fascinating thing that we're seeing is that this does not have to be, and in fact, optimally is not an approach that neglects cultural values. Instead, the most effective program that our group has identified is one that builds on the cultural strengths of First Nation communities. Deb, as Jerry was sharing with us at the conclusion of our last segment, you've just had some wonderful experiences illustrating the power of this kind of program. Do you have one or more stories that would help our listeners just really appreciate the value of what you're doing?
Yeah, I do. There, Dr. Moore had mentioned ice-cutting module that we had done first year that we began. And there was a few sessions that this module actually had in it. The first part was getting the net ready to be set out under the ice. And then the second phase of that was setting the net under the ice. And then the third phase was a weekly checking of the net afterwards. And as many of our youth participants come and help to check the net, and then with whatever fish that it had caught that day, we would have them go and deliver the fish to different elders in the community. And there was one day that one of my coworkers had been here, and he was getting ready to go out and check the net. On the a person had come to ask if a fish would be able to be delivered to his home. So anyway, my coworker went out. He happened to be the only one checking the net that day, and the fish or the net had caught just one fish. And so he decided to go and deliver that fish to the home of the person who had asked for the fish, who happened to be elders in the community as well. And so he brought the fish over to the home, and when he got there, the family who received the fish was, you know, they were all so very happy to gotten it. And as he was leaving, he got this really, and as he was driving home, then it had dawned on him that those same feelings that he was experiencing, you know, from delivering the fish to that home who was so very thankful for the fish, he thought that that was exactly the same kind of feeling that the youth, when they did deliver a fish to any other elder in.
And this,
no, this is
Jim,
tremendous. Go ahead. Yeah, Jim.
I wanted to just add that a couple things in Deb's story. One is that her coworker had this really strong, positive, deep experience, and these activities really set up an occasion where a young person can have that experience. And then another thing that really distinguishes what the community devised was they just don't have the experience after they do this activity under the ice fishing and learn these things and give away the fish. They will meet again with an elder and a group leader who will then review what they've done and talk about the cultural values that lie under the action they just engaged in. And we think that's really an important thing that distinguishes this from, you know, many other attempts in the past with programs like this.
So they're not just learning skills and talents from the elders, but they're actually really reconnecting with their culture and really visioning themselves, seeing themselves as a vital part of the community, connected both culturally and in a very practical way of helping provide actually some of the needs of people there in their own community.
Yeah, an example of that might be, and the same example that we were using is that the protective factor is both contributing to your community, so contributing to the families has been described. But it's also that when there's a problem, if you join together with other people to try to solve that, you have a real sense of what people have called collective mastery or efficacy. It's a big word for really learning that value of joining together with family, with friends, with community to solve problems. And I think what's great about this project is that we really target those protective factors that Native people have told us were what were influential in their lives, and then elders have systematically developed activities that will build them.
I mean, this is an incredible concept, and, you know, I know many of you are very connected at the center with other researchers throughout Native country. Are there a lot of other people that are catching this vision of a way to make a difference in any tribal setting or even in an urban setting where you're working with First Nation peoples? Is this something, this whole approach to reinstilling cultural values, connection with the community, is this something that you're seeing duplicated or played out in other settings as well?
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, this is Jim Allen, and in short, I think the answer is yes and more. I think many of us in the research community are really learning about the importance of approaches that involve the active participation of the community in both directing the program you're putting together and also directing the way research happens to understand if the program is effective. I think there's been a sea of change in that in the last 10 years.
Yeah, this is
Jerry, great. You had some comments as well.
Yeah, this is funded by National Institutes of Health, but the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration has funded some, you know, really excellent programs in Indian country to build the strength and resilience of communities. We've worked in the past with some here in Alaska and also down in the Ogallala Reservation with the Nagi Kichopi Calling Back of the Spirit project, which is essentially a similar concept of using the ways of healing and the deep cultural knowledge to build the strengths of young people and their families.
Deb, you know, one of the things I think that our listeners are very interested in, you know, from your perspective as both a community member and a member of the team, is, you know, what do you see, you know, in a kind of a firsthand way as you deal with individuals who are, you know, you shared this wonderful story. Is this, you know, something that's played out many times over? I mean, are you just seeing so many things happening in the young people that maybe you didn't see 5 or 10 years ago, that this would really be something that would encourage others to catch a similar vision if they don't already have it?
I do, and I would like to share that at the time I had been hired, I was kind of skeptical because about the you know, because they had raised me in, you know, the traditional Yupik way, but had experiences and all our modules, I found that there were so many in the community who had never experienced setting the nets under the ice or berry picking or making like a
We want to talk more, Deb, about this. We're going to come back to Deb and some of the rich cultural things that are happening in this project. Lessons for people throughout Indian country that we're learning from experts, community members in Alaska. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You want to stay tuned. We've got a lot more to come.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today especially about building evidence for cultural ways in which to address some of the challenges that our youth face throughout Indian country, especially looking at the areas of substance abuse and suicide risk. We've been speaking with Dr. Jerry Mohat. He's the director of the Center for Alaska Native Health Research, Dr. Jim Allen, PhD and professor of psychology with the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, but also a member of the Center for Alaska Native Health Research team. And then Debbie Ahlstrom, who's a community member, but most importantly, as far as today's show, she's actually a field research coordinator for the project. And Deb, you're in kind of a unique situation. Jim, you and Jerry deal with this a lot. Tell us from kind of an administrative standpoint, we've been, I think some of the listeners have been saying, well, you know, we don't have the best phone connections on this show. They're used to, you know, these crisp connections, but there's a reason for it, and I think it even adds richness to the show. Jim, do you mind sharing a little bit about some of the challenges you have when you speak on the phone with the center that Deb represents?
Yeah, Deb is connected to us by a telephonic bridge, but she is in a very small community out on the Bering Coast in the Yukon Delta region. And these phone lines are connected both through landlines but also through satellite connections, and sometimes, like today, they go in and out of sync. So I want to apologize to your listeners. Often Deb's voice may come and go a little bit, and it's just because she's almost 1,000 miles away from Fairbanks right now.
Wow, it's amazing. We're so glad that you guys are a team and that you're all together through, you know, these modern electronic connections, but sometimes they do leave something to be desired. But Deb, you're really bringing a lot to the table. We're so glad that you were able to get free and really join us for today's program. Before we had to step away for the break, you were sharing with us about just kind of a first-person view, your experience with seeing these young people getting back in touch with some of these cultural traditions, the ice fishing and the berry picking and some of these other things. So kind of go along, build on that theme a little bit, and help us catch even more of your enthusiasm.
I wonder,
maybe with all the,
Deb.
Yeah, maybe we did. You know, as we're trying to get Deb,
we can talk a little bit about some of that, and then when she comes back on and gets reconnected.
Beautiful. Why don't you go ahead and do that, Jerry or Jim?
Yeah, I think there have been a lot of changes you see, at least that are reported in the community that we've worked with intensively. Some of the things may seem sort of trivial, but they're really made a big difference. I know I was out there working with them at Halloween one year, and the elders were so appreciative of how the youth interacted with the elders and with the community, the lack of vandalism and other things, which they attributed to the program. I don't know if I would attribute it to the program, but perhaps, you know, there certainly was a movement where youth, as Debbie was saying, now talk to the elders, and there's a relationship there. And so they were seen as really being more polite and more helpful.
And I noticed something. We did a number of interviews besides using some measures to look at change, but we did a number of interviews with young people. And in many of these activities, the elders, they'd be talking in Yupik, and the young people would be listening in translation. There'd be maybe what you'd often see with young people all over the world. There'd be a little fidgeting, whispering. You know, you weren't really sure what was going on. And then after the program, many young people, when we spoke to, they surprised us. They said one of the things they most got out of the program is that they got to know the elders, and they were surprised by the fact of how much the elders knew about them, and that was a very important part of the experience to them. We also looked at things that protected young people from suicide, from alcohol. We looked at reasons for life, and we looked at awareness about alcohol and awareness about reasons why you would not want to drink. And we found those things going up in the community, within families, and within the individual young people.
So if someone was to ask, is there evidence that this program works? You're saying basically by direct measurement, the very things that have been demonstrated to prevent alcohol use or prevent suicide, these kind of things, these values, these perceptions are actually changing in the population that you're dealing with.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have some very direct evidence in terms of the surveys that the youth took. But there are also the measure, the attitude.
And I think we're here trying to pull another connection in. So those of you that are wondering if we've got a fax machine bleeding into the line or what, we're actually trying to reconnect with Deb, some thousand miles away from the rest of the team there in Fairbanks, Alaska. So this is presenting, you know, some both unique challenges, but a unique opportunity for us to bring people, you know, really to the table from a variety of different perspectives. So, so Jerry and Jim, as you look at these actual measurements, you really see that that this is making a difference. You know,
this is Jerry again.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, I was just saying that I think that there were some both direct measurements that...
Hello, this is Jim Allen rejoining the bridge.
Yeah, we're glad you're back with us too, Jim. We've had our challenges, but I think our listeners are really sensing that that this is a special program. I mean, pulling people together throughout that that vast area of Alaska is no small challenge, and you guys deal with it on a day-to-day basis, but our listeners are really getting a flavor for some of the challenges that there are, even with phone connections. People think those, you know, often take those for granted, in some places.
But yeah, go on. Like what happened is the satellites broke down and we just lost the whole bridge. But it's good to be back joining you again. I want to highlight that these same things happen with weather and trying to get into communities. And one of the reasons we're talking with Deb today in such a small community is she was planning to return to a larger community with better phone access, and the planes aren't flying today because of weather.
Yeah, you see, there's no roads between villages, so we fly everywhere in small planes. So there are all of these logistical challenges, but they make for an interesting time. But we were talking about changes in the community.
Yeah. Please, Gary.
You know, what the people tell us is that they see many changes in the youth and in the families, like Deb was describing earlier. It's only been done in one community. What we're doing is we are working in another community now, and we're going to work in two other communities, and we're going to have better evidence on whether this works in many different kinds of settings, as well as we're going to continue to work in the original villages that we worked in to see what happens in terms of the prevention of alcohol abuse and suicide. There have been less suicides since we began, but as we know, you have to have a long-term view of this to see if, in fact, the power of the intervention is going to be sustained over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things I admire so much about people in the communities is they really understand that these things take time. And mm-hmm. we've been working on this for 15 years now, and in this project to really establish what we're doing from a researcher perspective as having an evidence base, we intend it'll take another 5 years to do this, and the communities understand that and encourage us and have taken a long view as well, and they're being very careful, and they really want to understand very carefully what effect the program is having and what kind of changes we may be seeing in the young people and their families.
What's so tremendous, though, about the whole project, and I think anyone who's listening immediately senses this, is even if, and I don't think anyone is sensing it's going to end up this way, but even if it didn't seem to make a huge difference in some of these issues that launched you really in this direction, whether it's suicide prevention or substance abuse or alcohol abuse specifically, what's happening here is communities are, you know, like Deb said, I mean, it's exciting because families are coming closer together. I mean, kids are respecting the elders. They're becoming more culturally sensitive. And I think anyone throughout Indian country can say, I mean, this is a powerful intervention that's helping families, helping communities. I don't see how someone could say at the end of it, even if the data is unclear, to say, well, we really wasted our time. I don't sense that anyone is taking that perspective, are they?
Oh, I don't think so. And our data is very strong. It's just that as scientists, we tend to be cautious. We don't want to overstate until we have all of the evidence in. But we have very strong early results that show that the more that young people and parents are involved in these activities, in other words, the more that they participate, that the more change you see. You know, it's like you're a physician, and you know it's a dose-response curve.
Mm-hmm.
The more you get of it,
the more you do it,
the better off you are.
The other thing we learned, this was very important. Many of our programs have often only focused on the youth. And one other thing we learned from our work is the importance of also doing activities with the family on the level of the family, and also doing activities with the entire community. And when you work at multiple levels in the community, at the level of the youth, at the level of the family, and at the level of the community, it's very important. The community got very interested in the enforcement of the local option law, something we can talk about after the break.
No, let's do that, definitely. Dr. Jerry Mohat, Dr. Jim Allen are with us. We're hoping we'll get Deb back in with us before we finish. But a lot of practical information. We're going to be giving some real important take-home lessons in our final segment. Stay with us for more.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by the Lifestyle Center of America. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center and used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 800-596-5480. American Indian Living is also sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, known as NAHAI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHAI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHAI is available at nahaicharity.org.
Canned vegetables. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on. Help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I want to.
Sorry. Duncan.
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Yeah, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking with experts with the Center for Alaska Native Health Research. You've been listening to Dr. Jim Allen, Dr. Jerry Mohat, and to Deb Alstrom, who's the field research coordinator for the project that we've been speaking about. We're so glad to have them all back together for our final segment today. And before the break, Dr. Allen, you were speaking about some of the power that comes when you not only connect on the level of the family and with the youth themselves, but also with the entire community. Can you just give us something that really encapsulates the sense of the power of the community working together?
Yeah, that was one thing we learned, both from the community and from our data, is that these community-wide activities maybe had the largest impact of all the prevention activities we did. Couple things we observed happening was the community started talking and becoming much more active about their local option law. Here in Alaska, many communities have elected to ban the sale and importation and use of alcohol in their community. Mm-hmm. Another thing that happened community-wide that was very powerful, I think speaks to the importance of really thinking community-wide in doing these kinds of activities in indigenous communities, the community began a prayer walk. And in the evenings, a large number of people in the community would just go out in the community in the evening and walk through the community, stopping at houses on a prayer walk. It was very, very powerful, especially in the fall, towards the evening when it was starting to get dark, and they often carry candles.
Wow, that's something. And, Jerry, you've had some tremendous eye-opening experiences as you've worked with elders and just seen their reaction to everything that's happening.
Yeah, I think that the thing that, two things that have struck me most about this project is how the elders were able to bring back some very deep old traditional knowledge. Mm-hmm. For instance, how they thought about what suicide was and how traditionally they dealt with grief and with suicide to drive out the spirit of suicide from the community. That's one thing. And there were many instances of bringing back traditional knowledge, which is just as real for now as it was then. And then the other thing was that the elders, we had a person come and interview many of the elders to see what was really happening. And she reported that they said in the beginning this was UAF or the university's program. Then it became Deb and Art's program. But now it's our program. It's our research program. It belongs to us. And I think that's really what we can learn about doing this kind of research, that it has to be the community's program.
It's tremendous. Deb, there are a lot of people listening to this show, you know, across Native country. They've got all kinds of different backgrounds, different kind of cultural wisdom, different traditional values. But you have some real insights from your community level and some lessons that I think anyone can learn from. Do you want to share some final insights that might help someone else who maybe doesn't have access to a university or a research project? What can, you know, a small community in the American Southwest or in the Northeast or in the plains, the northern plains of the United States, what could they do that would build on what you've learned there in Alaska?
Okay, so for me, there have been kind of a lot of workshops or meetings that I have gone to, and there were a lot of conversations that would go on about how to best approach a problem. And there was quite a few meetings that I had gone to that, you know, where there would be talk that using the cultural approach would not work. But I think differently. I think that the approach, you know, with a culturally based way really, really does work, and it really does have a great big impact on the youth especially, as well as for myself, because when I had been first hired and I was, you know, learning learning the duties of my position, I really, really wondered why and how using all the cultural ways to teach youth about healthy lifestyles and reasons for living would work. And through the course of the work that we were doing, it has really proved to work to even this day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's always exciting to hear from someone who is a skeptic, you know, about the whole project. You know, you shared that in a variety of ways, Deb. And really to say, you know, this is something I didn't really, I had questions about whether it would work, and I've been seeing it work before my eyes, and I don't have any more questions. I mean, I think it's a powerful testimony, Jim and Jerry, to other people throughout Native country that may be saying, well, you know, all this sounds good, but I don't really think it makes any difference. But, I mean, we're getting, I think, a pretty convincing picture from the work that you've all been doing together.
Yeah, it really does work. It really is very, very intense work, and it takes a deep commitment. The elders and the community met nearly 100 times over a year and a half to devise and deliver these activities. And, you know, that's a really big, big commitment. And but with that level of commitment, the knowledge is there, the power of that knowledge and of that to stimulate those experiences that Jim and Debbie have been talking about has an enormous impact. And sometimes people say, well, youth are so acculturated, they love TV, they love this, they love that, that traditional knowledge will not resonate with them. And we found exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. It really gives them something of meaning and of identity that is very deep.
As one of the young people told us and asked the question, well, what does culture have to do with reasons for living? She said, it gives me something inside. It gives me something to feel good about myself with.
Mm. So really what I hear you all three of you saying, as far as probably one of the most important lessons from the show, is that anything that can be done at the community level, anything that can help elders tap into their wisdom and find ways to share that with the youth is not just something that is building on a rich cultural foundation, but this is actually at the heart of giving the younger generations a reason to live, reasons to avoid some of the very strong temptations towards substance abuse and alcohol in particular. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. We had a module called Kinship. Part of that module was every youth had to talk about their Yupik name, their traditional Native name. Where did it come from? What did it mean? There's a good example of how a cultural knowledge really impacts how you think about yourself.
And it's a living tradition, too. Many of the elders would point out, you know, really interested in raising healthy Yupik for the 21st century.
I mean, this is exciting, and it's tremendous that with modern technology, we've been able to talk together, but it's really the traditional wisdom of the elders that's really made the program efficacious. A very kind of interesting mix of modern research and modern technology with the realities of some of the challenges we face, whether it was difficulties with phone connections or actually implementing programs that help people get back in touch with their cultural values. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I hope you've enjoyed today's edition of American Indian Living. A very, very special thanks to our three guests, each of whom has devoted a huge amount to make a difference in Indian country. Thank you to each of you, and thank you to you for joining us on today's edition of American Indian Living.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. We hope today's program has contributed to your living a healthy life. American Indian Living Radio is brought to you by the Native Education and Health Initiative in partnership with the Lifestyle Center of America and Life Talk Radio. American Indian Living is also distributed through the public radio satellite system by American Indian Radio on Satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.